Today's seminar is titled Identifying and Evaluating Ecosystem Services at Contaminated Sites Prior to Remediation, and it is sponsored by our office, the U.S. EPA Technology Innovation and Field Services Division, as part of the Superfund program. Our key speaker today is Sarah Slack, who I will introduce in a couple of minutes, and my name is Carlos Pachon, and I am with the Superfund program here in TIPSI. And one of the areas I work in is in green remediation. So I welcome you again and thank you for joining us today for this webcast discussion on identifying and evaluating ecosystem services at contaminated sites prior to remediation. We are at very early stages of understanding this concept. In hopes to hear your thoughts and through your questions and open discussion, we hope to learn more about the state of the practice in this area. I see the next hour and a half as an opportunity to exchange information, needs, and expectations in this area. EPA cleanup programs are undertaking discussion on ecosystem services at site cleanups as part of a broader discussion of green remediation. We first started to use the term green remediation in 2007, and it was first published in 2008 in a green remediation primer that laid out the basic ideas behind the concept of reducing the environmental footprint of cleaned up contaminated sites. Since the release of, since then, we have released numerous technical and policy pieces, such as an ongoing series of technology-specific fact sheets on green remediation and an agency policy. This policy, titled Principles for Greener Cleanups, was signed by our assistant administrator about a year ago next week, and applies to all cleanup programs. One of the principles that it lays out is an understanding of the nature of the environmental footprint of cleanups and associated measures that will help inform decisions and actions taken to address such footprints. EPA is working internally and with external partners to develop an understanding and eventually a methodology for quantifying the environmental footprint of site cleanup work. And significant progress is being made in areas such as air quality, energy use, and materials management. However, ecosystem services, identified as one of the core elements of green remediation, and measuring these is an area that we're finding to be more challenging, which is why we're here today. Since 1997, our office has benefited from participation in a fellowship program called the National Network for Environmental Management Studies, NEMS. This is a very competitive fellowship, and this year we're fortunate to host Sarah Slack of the University of Connecticut. In her application for the fellowship, Sarah identified an interest in green remediation, and upon her arrival, took on expanding our knowledge and facilitating discussion on this topic. Sarah is a senior at the University of Connecticut studying resource economics and environmental policy, and she has also interned with the Connecticut Department of Environmental Protection in the Bureau of Water Protection and Land Reuse. Sarah is graduating in December and is looking forward to a career in the environmental field. The material she is presenting today is a product of her work over the last 3 months. These are her perspectives and findings and should not be interpreted as agency policy or guidance. However, we do hope that her work, as well as this discussion that takes place today on this Internet seminar, will contribute significantly to advancing the state of the practice in understanding green remediation best practices in general, and more specifically, ecosystem services affected by the work undertaken to clean up contaminated sites. Please go to slide two. Where's my mouse? There it is. A bit more of housekeeping. As I said earlier, for those of you on the phone lines, please mute your phones and do not put this call on hold. To mute, you can press star six, and to unmute, you can press #6. Sarah will be directing the speaking and also taking questions throughout the presentation. She'll be queuing you for those. And at the end of the presentation, we'll be having hopefully a more robust discussion. We'll be able to address questions that we weren't able to take during the seminar itself. Across the top of your screen, you have the navigation buttons for this seminar. The two little arrow buttons, of course, are to advance the slides. And the question mark button, for those of you either on the phone lines or on the internet. You can press that button at any time, and we'll be seeing the questions you have. We'll be managing those questions from here. Okay, with that, I'll go ahead and please go to slide number 3, and I'll hand it over to Sarah.
Okay, first of all, I would like to thank Carlos for that introduction, as well as everyone else for participating in today's webinar. If we could move on to the next slide. The purpose of this presentation, as well as the report I've composed this summer, have been prepared to raise awareness of ecosystem services and foster the development of a replicable methodology to identify and evaluate ecosystem services at a contaminated site. If ecosystem services are considered prior to and throughout the remediation process, then project managers have the opportunity to mitigate any unnecessary impacts on the ecosystem from remedial actions. The intended result is to prompt project managers to evaluate and revise their remedial operations in order to minimize any remedial impacts on ecosystem services. Today's presentation will explain the concept of ecosystem services. I will also outline steps that project managers may find useful when undertaking an assessment of ecosystem services. I will highlight basic techniques which can be utilized at a variety of sites to minimize ecological damage. And lastly, I will cover data collection needs and highlight potential areas of concern. As Carlos mentioned, this concept is developing under the green remediation approach to site cleanup. If we can move on to the next slide, please. The EPA defines green remediation as the practice of considering all environmental effects of remedy implementation and incorporating options to minimize the environmental footprint of cleanup actions. The remediation of contaminated waste sites is an action undertaken to protect human health and the environment. However, impacts from the cleanup process need to be taken into account as well, such as energy use, greenhouse gas emissions, and disruptions to the water cycle. Green remediation involves more than merely adopting a specific technology or technique. It is a compilation of practices which will help reduce negative impacts on the environment, thereby maximizing the net environmental benefits of cleanup. As you can see, the EPA has identified 5 core elements of green remediation: energy, air, water, land and ecosystems, and materials and waste. This categorization method represents the breakdown of a site's footprint. As Carlos mentioned, there is a significant collection of data on energy and air quality green remediation practices. However, this presentation focuses on the land and ecosystems element, which fosters ideas of land management and ecosystem protection. Next slide, please. This would be slide number 4. There is a growing recognition of the significance of ecosystem services as well as the dramatic impact human activities can have on these essential services. Ecosystem services are the benefits human populations derive from ecosystems. There are 2 basic types of services, direct and indirect, which are categorized based on how humans benefit from them. Ecosystems provide services that human populations directly consume or benefit from, such as raw materials, water, and food. These services are often the most readily identifiable. Ecosystems also provide services from which humans benefit from indirectly. These services do not provide a direct good or opportunity to society, however, they support necessary biological processes required by the ecosystem. Examples include nutrient cycling, water regulation, and pollination. A fully functioning ecosystem will provide a variety of direct and indirect services. For example, a forest ecosystem may provide services which directly benefit human populations, such as recreation and educational opportunities, or genetic and medicinal resources. In addition, this type of ecosystem may provide indirect services such as climate regulation through carbon sequestration, erosion control, and habitat for wildlife. Moving on to slide number 5. When undertaking an ecosystem service assessment, project managers can choose whether to follow the Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Approach, or MEA, to ecosystem services, or the Final Ecosystem Service Approach. I am sure many of you have heard of the United Nations-sponsored Millennium Ecosystem Assessment Program, which reports on the consequences of ecosystem change. As you can see, the MEA has broken ecosystem services down into 4 categories. Regulating and supporting services are often least recognized and appreciated by society. Regulating services are the benefits humans obtain from the regulation of ecosystem processes. And supporting services are those that are necessary functions for the production of other ecosystem services. Provisioning services are the physical materials or products obtained from the ecosystem, and cultural services, the non-material benefits humans obtain, are more straightforward and identifiable. The examples listed are just some of the services provided in each category. This structure is helpful in and understanding the numerous roles that ecosystem services play and the diversified benefits that they provide to human populations. It conveys the idea that ecosystems are socially, economically, and environmentally valuable in ways that are not always intuitive. However, in this scenario, if project managers are assessing a contaminated site's ecosystem services, I recommend focusing on final ecosystem services. On to slide 6, please.
I'm sorry, there are 2 more slides, the cover slides, so please add 2 numbers to...
Okay, so then we're moving on to slide 8. The final ecosystem services approach only addresses services that are directly enjoyed, consumed, or used by society. Final ecosystem services can also be thought of as the end products of nature. By reducing the focus on indirect services, this approach will simplify the process and allow project managers to more readily identify ecosystem services and assess potential impacts. This recommendation will assist interested stakeholders and the community in understanding the direct connection between the protection of ecosystem services and the preservation of human well-being. However, for these purposes, a number of indirect services have been added to the traditional final ecosystem services approach. This has been done because project managers may have an influence over and the ability to identify and limit impacts on these specific services. The additions include climate regulation, erosion control, waste treatment, and habitat. Just to give a quick rundown of what these services are, disturbance regulation is the ecosystem's ability to alleviate impacts from natural events such as floods and hurricanes. Water supply refers to the filtering, storage, and retention of water in streams and lakes and aquifers. Food production is the provision of wild food sources such as fish and game. Raw materials include renewable sources of materials such as lumber, fuel, and fiber. Genetic and medicinal resources includes the use of wild genes for scientific purposes and in the production of pharmaceuticals. Cultural services include such things as recreation, aesthetics, and scientific and spiritual experiences with nature. Climate regulation refers to the regulation of favorable climatic conditions such as temperature and precipitation. Erosion control is the prevention of soil loss by wind and runoff. Waste treatment is the ecosystem's ability to store and recycle organic and inorganic nutrients. And lastly, habitat is the provision of suitable environments for local and transient species. I started with the MEA categorization method in case interested parties want to take that approach and evaluate all the site's potential services. By no means am I saying we should ignore the important services that regulate and support the ecosystem. However, for initial implementation, it may be more practical to begin with the final ecosystem services approach. Do we have any questions so far on the concept of ecosystem services and final ecosystem services?
No, just one comment though, Sarah, a request if you could speak a little bit slower, covering a lot of material, so that would be helpful. And then we understand that some folks are having a bit of trouble with the audio portion, we're seeking to address that. For the folks on the phone, any questions so far?
EPA Region 9, I have a question. Where would, you mentioned food production and mentioned that referred to wild food. Where would agricultural food production fit in here?
Agricultural production, since that is often supplemented by fertilizer and a lot of other inputs from industrial society, isn't really considered a service that is provided by a regular ecosystem. So in this instance, you're probably not going to find a contaminated site that is producing agricultural sources of food. So in this scenario, it doesn't really apply.
Actually, Sarah, my name is Sheila Abraham. I work for Ohio EPA in the state, and we actually have an NPL site where cattle have been impacted by site-related contamination. So there could be some situations where you do have agricultural products that have been impacted by contamination. So.
Okay, great. I hadn't realized that. What was the name of the site you just mentioned?
It's called the Nice Chemical Site, Superfund site. And there are a number of other sites that we've worked on where they've had not the cattle, but the agricultural type production where we've had heavy metals in the soil, for example. So. Those are issues we've been dealing with also at other state-led sites.
Okay.
This is an important scope question. I think as not been addressed.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you. Other questions?
Okay, so moving on to slide number 9. Humans have impacted the provision of ecosystem services in a variety of ways and continue to do so. Contaminated sites themselves are even excellent examples of the profound impacts that humans have enacted on ecosystems. It is important to realize that changes in the quantity or the quality of ecosystem services will affect human populations. Even small-scale changes to ecosystem services, like the ones which may occur at contaminated sites, can alter the current and potential future benefits that humans may derive from the environment. Humans depend on the continued provision of ecosystem services, just like all other species. However, it is estimated that nearly two-thirds of these services are in decline worldwide. Contaminated sites extend from urban to rural settings and encompass ecosystems of all kinds. The map shown here on page 9 represents the national priorities list, excluding Alaska. The yellow icons represent sites on the list, and the red icons represent proposed sites. These sites have the potential to provide significant services to society, and their value needs to be recognized prior to remediation. Through an identification and evaluation process, project managers can take steps to avoid unnecessary impacts on ecosystem services from remedial actions. It is important to note that the map only represents Superfund sites. There are thousands of other contaminated sites not listed on the NPL that would benefit from an assessment of ecosystem services as well. Moving on to slide 10. Replicable steps need to be constructed for remedial project managers to utilize when undertaking an assessment of a site's ecosystem services. The ecosystem services assessment, which I will outline, includes four major steps, which are service identification, site prioritization, impact identification, and mitigation. The service identification and site prioritization phases should take place during site characterization or the initial stages of remedial planning, whereas the following steps, impact identification and mitigation, can take place during remedy evaluation and selection. This will allow for a data collection period and an upfront assessment of the site services, which then will be applied during the following decision-making processes. This type of process may also present valuable insight and opportunities to project managers and the community, which can be utilizing when creating site reuse or revitalization plans. By creating a baseline of what ecosystem components already exist at a site, project managers can use this as a starting point and can build off of what is already there. It must be stressed that in no way should this process degrade the level of cleanup necessary to protect human health and the environment. Information collected while assessing ecosystem services should not be used to compromise the protectiveness of cleanup. There are a multitude of opportunities for reducing negative impacts on services while maintaining a high remediation standard. Let's move on to the next slide. This is slide 11. The first step in an ecosystem services assessment would be to identify what services the site provides. Currently, the best method to approach this would be to utilize a comprehensive list of ecosystem services. Only a subset of the services on the overall list will apply to any one site. As a result, it will be necessary to evaluate the list and ascertain which services apply. Depending on the site, this process may be relatively simple or very complex. This is why it is helpful to strictly focus on final ecosystem services. Another way to approach the identification process would be to initially define the type of ecosystem involved. When the type of ecosystem is identified, it may help narrow down the applicable services which need to be considered. The development of a tool which would assist in this process would be extremely beneficial. The table provided on this page is an example of what this tool may look like and address. The cultural services section is left off of this particular chart, since they are often determined by individual preferences. When taking this type of approach, project managers should be aware that ecosystem services are site-specific. So even though it would be unlikely to find sources of, say, erosion control in a desert ecosystem, it is not impossible. This type of approach should be used as guidance, not a comprehensive solution. It is also important to note that the site may contain different types of ecosystems. Project managers can map out the site on these ecosystem lines and assess areas individually if this is the approach they choose to take. Next slide, please. On to slide 12. The next phase in the assessment is site prioritization. There may be a number of services provided by one site, so it may not be possible to evaluate and mitigate remedial impacts on each site, on each service, sorry. This may especially be the case in a larger site or a site that encompasses multiple ecosystem types. If this is the situation, decisions will need to be made to determine which services are priorities to preserve or reduce impacts to. The figure shown here is a simplified representation of the relationship between site priorities and services provided by the site. There are a number of questions and conditions to consider which will be beneficial when setting site priorities. If we can move on to the next slide, slide number 13. Here are some conditions to consider. Scarcity refers to, is the service in short supply relative to demand? Are remedial actions going to push the service across a threshold that leads to scarcity or a shortage in production? If the service is degraded due to the site's contamination, then even a mild impact may result in a dramatic decrease in the service's ability to continue functioning. Vulnerability refers to how sensitive the service is to a disturbance. Is the production of the service likely to be affected in a minor or serious manner? For instance, if a site contains a grove of young trees, their ability to withstand disturbance will not be as effective as a grove of mature trees with stronger root structures. Reversibility. If the service is impacted, will there be opportunities for the environment to naturally restore itself? Is this a service that will be addressed during the revitalization process? Or will habitable soil and sediments remain? Lastly, are there any substitutes for the service? Is there another area or regional ecosystem which provides the service? Are there any man-made substitutes? A substitute can include a manufactured product or physical structure that provides a similar service. For example, water filtration facilities have been compared with the natural processes of a watershed. Looking at this through MEA's category structure, regulating and cultural services are likely to be site-specific, so substitutes are not likely to be found, whereas provisioning services such as raw materials and medicinal resources are more likely to have substitutes. So these are just some of the questions which may guide project managers when setting site priorities. If these considerations have not aided the decision-making process, then project managers can move on to other tools such as community involvement and economic valuation. We can take a minute to pause here, and does anyone have any questions?
Remember, if you're on the phone lines, remember to click unmute. That would be
question for Sarah. On the service identification slide, what do the different colors represent? And if you said this, I'm sorry, I missed it.
No, actually, I didn't mention that. The different colors represent, they each belong to a different category of the MEA structure. The services on top, the green services, are regulating services. The darker green color is a supporting service, and the blue on the bottom are provisioning services.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay, and for those of you on the internet, remember you can click on the question mark button at any point. I hear there's still some trouble or challenge hearing us, so we'll move a little bit closer to the mic, and we'll also make some adjustments on the IT end. So again, if you have any questions on what's been covered so far, feel free to ask them now.
Okay, so on slide 14, ecosystem service priorities will often vary according to user. Community members, local businesses, and indigenous populations may all value different services that the site provides, or they may all value the same service but for different reasons. Depending on the level of community involvement in the remediation process, this would be an appropriate time to garner their input on what ecosystem services are significant to them. Recognition of the ecosystem services that are most valuable to the local or regional community may provide considerable insight and assist in the process of setting site priorities, as well as the creation of revitalization plans. One way to garner input from the surrounding community is through small group deliberations. The basic idea is that small groups of the general public can be brought together to deliberate about the necessity of each service. So in this way, project managers can not only hear what the community's priorities are, but also the reasons behind their opinions. Another option to assist in this process would be to conduct an economic valuation of the services. Market and non-market valuation methods could be utilized to assign quantitative values for ecosystem services. Valuation attempts to apply a monetary value to the services in order to provide a common measurement to compare them by. As you know, some services, such as food production and raw materials, are actually traded in markets, so valuation data will be more readily available. However, for other services, such as pollination or nutrient cycling, economic valuation will be more complex. There are a variety of valuation techniques available for this type of assessment, which I won't get into detail here, but you can see some of the available options for this type of assessment in this chart. This process can develop a more tangible representation of the contributions that ecosystem services provide to human well-being. Moving on to slide 15. So at this point in the assessment, the site's ecosystem services have been identified, and it has been determined what services are site priorities. The next step for project managers will be to identify potential impacts on the selected services. Impacts on ecosystem services are any actions that alter the quality and or quantity of the service. For example, a certain remedy may reduce the quantity or area of available habitat for wildlife. Another impact may reduce the water quality of a nearby surface water. There are also two areas from which impacts may stem from during the remediation process. The first are any impacts from the remedy implementation itself. The second are impacts from day-to-day activities that take place around the site during the cleanup process. These are things such as vehicle and equipment traffic and construction activities. Project managers must keep in mind that ecosystems are complex. One single action may have an obvious direct impact on the ecosystem. However, it may also have one or more not-so-obvious indirect effects. It can be difficult to correctly identify and address indirect impacts because the relationship between ecosystem functions can be difficult to discern. For example, if the remedy selected will require heavy vehicle traffic, then there is a potential for wide-scale soil compaction at the site. This compaction will reduce the soil's ability to absorb rainwater, thereby increasing runoff and potentially soil erosion. This may result in a reduction in vegetation growth and subsequently wildlife habitat. The runoff may also carry particles of sediment and organic matter into a nearby surface water. This is an exaggerated example, but it just shows how one action can have multiple effects. Another thing to consider is the probability that an identified impact will occur. For instance, the further away a body of water is to a contaminated site, the lower the probability is that any action will affect the water supply. However, when the probability of occurrence cannot be identified or is difficult to ascertain, it is best to err on the side of caution and assume that impacts will occur. As previously mentioned, ecosystems are complex and cannot be looked at as independent operating parts. The use or degradation of one ecosystem service may influence the availability or the functionality of other ecosystem services at the site. For example, increasing the use of raw materials such as timber may decrease the provision of other services such as local climate regulation and erosion control. Some of the occurrences where one site is impacting another may overlap with the previously discussed indirect impacts. However, this can be a different way to assess the situation and may uncover impacts that are previously missed. Moving on to slide 16, please. So the last step in this type of assessment would be to assess how we can mitigate impacts on ecosystem services. Project managers need to identify what can be done to avoid the impacts altogether or at least reduce their effects on the provision of services. If there are multiple remedy options available, then project managers have the opportunity to consider the results of the ecosystem services assessment during the remedy selection process. However, the focus of green remediation is not on remedy selection. The objective is to build and operate current technologies and methods in a way that limits negative impacts on the environment. As a result, if project managers are interested in mitigating impacts from remedy implementation, it will require an investigation into how they can operate necessary technologies while limiting harm to ecosystem services. This will be an ongoing process which can lead to the compilation of best management practices regarding ecosystem protection and remedy implementation. When project managers are striving to mitigate the impacts from day-to-day procedures around the site, It will benefit from the utilization of basic practices which limit ecological damage to a site, which are discussed on the next slide, slide number 17. Various levels of an assessment could be completed depending on the available time, funding, and expertise. If a detailed assessment is not applicable, then there are a variety of actions such as these listed, which can still be incorporated into any site cleanup that minimize the damage inflicted upon ecosystem services. These practices were taken from EPA's Ecological Revitalization, Turning Contaminated Properties into Community Assets publication. For example, project managers can create work zone and traffic plans for the site, designating specific areas where site traffic is and is not allowed through the utilization of a traffic plan, which will reduce impacts on ecosystem services such as widespread soil compaction. Plans should be made not only for on-site traffic, but also designating where site workers and equipment can and cannot be utilized. This will minimize unnecessary disruptions to sensitive areas and existing habitat. Project managers can create remediation plans in which they phase site work. Phasing site work involves remediating one area at a time and ensuring that the area is stabilized before disrupting another. Another issue to consider when constructing site work plans are local animal populations in any sensitive period, such as nesting or breeding for certain species. If project managers are taking this type of approach, they should inform everyone involved in the site's remediation, such as contractors, construction leaders, and community involvement coordinators. If these steps are taken, it will lay out a site-wide policy standard and allow project managers to gather support and ideas from other involved parties. During this process, project managers should inform the involved parties of the actions that they will be taking in order to increase awareness and participation. So at this time, does anyone have any questions on, like, the overall assessment process, you know, the four stages and what they look at?
While the people on the phone formulate their questions, I'll take a couple of short ones from the Internet, both from Sheila Abraham from Ohio EPA. The first is pretty basic. She's asking whether there's a reference for the Millennium, the MEA and FES, where they can look up more details. So maybe you want to talk about the resources?
Yes. Additional resources are posted online where you began the seminar. The Millennium Ecosystem Assessment is located there. The final Ecosystem Services Assessment, I kind of created what I saw as final ecosystem services. There's some sources out there that discuss it, but most follow the Millennium Ecosystem approach. But I can add more resources on the final ecosystem approach to the additional resources page as well.
And on that, similar related to that, we haven't mentioned that the draft paper has been posted.
Yes, the draft paper is posted as well under the additional resources section. So if anyone is interested in reading it, I would greatly appreciate any feedback or comments that you have. Unfortunately, my last day here at the EPA is tomorrow. So if you do have any feedback or comments, if you could email my personal email address, it's listed at the end of the presentation, but it's sarahaslack@gmail.com.
And the second question from Sheila was, federal government has been moving away from contingent valuation based on her interaction with NRDs. Is that still a valid option?
In the research that I looked at, it wasn't still a valid option, and there was a lot of discussion on it. There are issues with it because for people that aren't familiar with it, it's a compilation of hypothetical scenarios which are posed to the public, and then they choose, like, which one they would prefer, and it's often involved by their willingness to pay for each scenario. So one of the problems that I've come upon is that people will go with the option that they want, but they don't actually have to put up the money for that option, so it's not actually the best representation of what it's really worth because they're not actually spending the money. So I do admit there are some issues with it, and research is still used, but it's potentially true that the government is moving away from that as well.
questions on from the phone line participants.
Sarah, this is Lou Martino with Argonne. I think you did a really good job here. I read through your paper, and it's a really good read, and it's very informative. I just noticed something, you know, with this slide that you have here on practices to minimize ecological damage, you might want to even change the title, because you're not only identifying and evaluating ecosystem services, you're kind of, it should be identification, evaluation, and perhaps preservation of ecosystem services or management of ecosystem services, because you've got, you know, this suggestion on practices to minimize ecological damage.
Yeah, that, and you're right, that's kind of the whole purpose here, and I kind of missed it in the title. Okay, so looking at slide 18, the assessment that I've laid out here has had a qualitative focus. However, it can also be done in a more quantitative manner. Quantitative evaluations can be extremely beneficial because they provide a more detailed and accurate assessment of site conditions. However, since ecosystem services are not the primary focus of remediation projects, it may not be applicable or realistic to undertake more quantitative measures. That's really up to the project managers and how in-depth they want to take this. But here are some data collection methods that I came up with that I think would be great. Models, you know, simplified representations which simulate the dynamics of interacting plant and animal species, as well as other biological ecosystem processes. There's models out there that can assess hydrology, population, climate, ecosystem processes, and entire terrestrial ecosystems. There's potential to pull data from those models, as well as the creation of smaller scale models which look at a site. Indicators could also potentially be helpful. Indicators take a quantifiable measurement of the environment, which represents the overall condition of the ecosystem or of the specific service. An example of this is, you know, mean temperatures and carbon dioxide concentrations are now accepted as indicators for climate change. So it's important to choose indicators which can be measured quantifiably and represent the true condition of the ecosystem service. Some ideas here, wildlife population data, you know, could be informative when identifying habitats. Water quality sampling could provide information on erosion control capabilities and the available water supply. So indicators would benefit from further development and standardization, I think. However, they may be applicable to this type of assessment in the future. Geographic information systems allow for the assessment of various data sets on the same spatial scale. In the past, GIS has been utilized to assess human impacts on the ecosystem. It uses information on factors such as roads, land use, and human population densities to assess their relationship to ecosystem health. So information could potentially be pulled from these assessments and applied to site evaluations. GIS has also been used at a site level to assess and compare data on contaminated ground and surface water, as well as contaminated soil. So utilizing GIS for that application could be coupled with an ecosystem service assessment in order to benefit the overall remediation project. Lastly, the surrounding community may provide critical insight into ecosystem services in a data collection regards as well. In this scenario, they would be assisting project managers in identifying a site's services. If the community is involved in the initial identification phase, it would set up a greater understanding and foster a feeling of involvement, which would also benefit the overall remediation project. It's important to note that local knowledge should be supplemented by other sources of data to ensure that a complete and accurate evaluation of the site is made. There are a variety of methods to involve the community and collect data through their participation, such as town hall style meetings, surveys, and a method called participatory rural appraisal. So moving on to the next slide, slide 19. I've had a lot of back and forth with people on ecological risk assessments and natural resource damage assessments as potential sources of data. ERAs and NRDAs have distinct purposes in the remediation process. However, they can be carried out in a way that is mutually supportive and benefits ecosystem service assessments. There was a recent technical workshop by the Society of Environmental Toxicology and Chemistry, which discussed the creation of generic ecosystem service endpoints. If this development did occur, it could benefit the ERA and NRDA process as well as the ecosystem service assessment. If this doesn't occur, the natural resource damage assessments have the potential to become sources of information. They're not carried out on every site, so the applicability may be limited, but there's still potential out there. Moving on to slide 20. There's a variety of issues and concerns, as you all probably know, with this type of assessment. There's a variability in how ecosystems function, which may make it difficult to predict how remedial actions will impact the provision of ecosystem services. In addition, a number of services will be more readily identifiable compared with others. You know, for instance, the identification of habitat will most likely be a relatively easy process compared with the identification of ecosystem components, which provide services such as gas regulation and nutrient cycling. You know, however, if project managers are following the final ecosystem services approach, then these complexities might not concern them. Another factor to consider is that services could be provided on varying temporal scales. Production of a certain service may take place year-round, whereas the production of other services may be limited to a certain season. This complication may make it difficult to identify services if the identification phase of the assessment takes place during a service's off-season. As a result, certain services could be overlooked and unintended impacts may occur. Certain services may also respond to disturbances on different timescales. So it's important to assess the impacts considering the long-term implications as well as any immediate effects. Going on to the next slide, slide 21, there's complications with sources of data. They're unevenly distributed among the type of ecosystem as well as services. And so when necessary information is hard to come by, it can be difficult to assess the services at a site uniformly. For example, there have been several studies done on, you know, wetland and forest ecosystems. And in terms of services, most research has been done on provisioning services. But that level of research doesn't apply to every service out there. And so without equivalent knowledge of all the services available at a site, there's potential for unwanted, unknown trade-offs, and even missed opportunities. Issues regarding community participation may stem from a lack of background knowledge on the concept of ecosystem services. So when tapping into the local community to garner their input, it is critical that time is taken to explain exactly what ecosystem services are. Information collected during the community involvement initiative may also reflect people's own priorities rather than the actual condition of the site. So it's important that community involvement is carefully planned and implemented to avoid bias. That's also why it's essential for project managers to follow up on any information provided by the local community. So there are concerns over the use of economic valuation techniques as well. Valuation techniques that utilize market data for services, such as raw materials like timber, usually do not represent the total value of that service. You know, the market price represents the tree's utilization as timber. It doesn't represent the other services that the tree provides, like erosion control and habitat. Market data can also be affected when the government controls or raises the price of certain goods. Several of the non-market valuation techniques involve surveying the community to derive the value they place on the service. So the same concerns apply here that were mentioned in the community involvement section. So those are just some concerns which need to be understood before undertaking this type of assessment. If we move on to slide 22, just to take a look at this kind of work in action, the Rocky Mountain Arsenal site is a 27-acre project in Colorado. It's kind of an excellent example of what can be done. Site-wide traffic and work plans were put in place to reduce disruption of sensitive areas and existing habitat. A bald eagle management area was located at the site, so remediation and construction activities were restricted during a period of the year to avoid disrupting sensitive nesting and breeding times. Site managers adopted an awareness of the environment, phasing the site work into 88 stages. Minimally invasive remediation techniques were also selected. Excavation occurred up to the drip line, which is the outer circumference of tree branches, so that the existing trees could remain intact. This site was remediated in a way that minimized impacts on the natural systems existing there, while keeping the standard of cleanup necessary to protect human health and the environment. Moving on to slide 23. You know, the idea of including this type of assessment into the remediation process is a relatively new concept, so it would benefit from a lot further thought and research, but in a recent publication, the Science Advisory Board highly recommended the evaluation of ecosystem services and their contribution to human well-being from the earliest stages of remediation. It will really allow project managers to proactively manage any ecosystem services, risks, and opportunities. You know, sites such as the Rocky Mountain Arsenal haven't completed the assessment that I've outlined, but they've taken steps to alleviate impacts. It is critical that project managers continue remediation projects with ecosystem services in mind. This process, along with a series of pilot projects containing an ecosystem service assessment, would assist in the development of a standardized approach and facilitate the necessary data gathering and research on ecosystem services. I think OSWRG can even potentially utilize results from ecosystem service assessments to monitor and record the environmental benefits that accumulate from remediation and revitalization of the nation's contaminated waste sites. If we move on to the next slide, slide 23, here are some of the online resources that are posted on the additional resources page. For a lot more information on green remediation, you can go to cluein.org. If you go to the next slide, slide 25, you can see my contact information. As I said, my last day here at the EPA is tomorrow, Thursday, August 19th. So if you have any questions or want to contact me after the 19th, please email my Gmail email address that's posted there, or you can contact Carlos, who can put you in touch with me. Also, as previously mentioned, the report is posted on additional resources section, so feel free to read it. I would really appreciate any feedback or comments that you have. So if anyone has any additional questions, comments, this would be the time. I'd be glad to hear them.
Thank you, Sarah. And on the report, we will be taking the comments. Sarah will be taking the comments, I understand. And once she has incorporated any additional feedback she receives today or through email, we will be doing proofing and editing that of the final report, which we hope will be released sometime around November, possibly around Thanksgiving. So do be on the lookout for that. So let me ask any questions on the phone lines.
This is David Moore with Weston Solutions. Is there a program within EPA to begin formulating tools to support the application of ecosystem services on these sites?
Well, there on the Green Remediation website that Sarah pointed out earlier, we do have a section on evaluating environmental footprints. So that's where you'll find the information that we have we are currently co-locating. There is a lot of work taking place for example, the Air Force and the Army and the Navy are funding the development of tools that can help a project manager understand what a footprint is. Some of them are lean heavily on the remedy selection side and not so much on what actions can be taken to address, an environmental footprint. And not all of them have that much. Actually, it's probably one of the major shortcomings is that few of them have significant depth as far as ecosystem services are concerned. They have more information as far as energy use, water impacts, air quality issues, et cetera, but not that much on ecosystem services. So I think we're all learning, we're all moving forward. I'd encourage that you keep an eye on that section of the Green Mediation website where, you know, that information I just gave you is on there, and we'll continue to update it as we move forward.
EPA's Office of Research and Development is also, they have a variety of ecosystem service assessments going on right now. So you can look to their website for more information. They don't apply to contaminated sites per se, but they're looking at how to quantify and evaluate ecosystem services.
Okay, I'll take one of the questions on the internet. The question is from Crystal Taylor at Texas CEQ in Austin. The question is, has the number of communities requesting green mitigation increased also over the past several years? And are communities aware of green remediation options? Want to go first?
Well, I think that's definitely something that, like I said, if you undertake a community involvement initiative, communities need to be aware of what ecosystem services actually are, as well as the idea of green remediation, because that's where this assessment is really taking place under. But I definitely think the process would benefit from more communities being aware of green remediation.
And I think, Crystal, the question is broader than ecosystem services, so let me just make that note. But awareness is a really important part, as Sarah just pointed out. And there are other parts of green remediation, particularly air quality issues. SOx, NOx, PM emissions associated with heavy equipment being used on the site that have more of a direct impact, and communities may be more aware of them. But in general, community awareness of opportunities to reduce the footprint of cleanups is an area where we've certainly been directed in EPA to focus on. And you'll notice that in the principles for greener cleanups that our assistant administrator signed in August of last year. Any other questions from the phone participants?
Yeah, this is Karen Sherman in EPA Region 9. I'm just curious, Sarah, what your perspective is on how this can or should be applied to either urban sites or very small sites. I'm aware of a couple of sites that I'm working on that are fairly big, and it would seem to make sense for that, but also a site that's basically paved over, urban, and very small. And I'm just wondering if it basically, you know, doesn't really make sense to go to the effort for that sort of site, or do you see any reason to go through the effort of an ecosystem analysis for that sort of site?
I think that's a great question. You know, a lot of urban sites that are mostly paved over, you know, first look, there's probably not a lot of ecosystem services going on there. So if you go through just the first phase of service identification, it might really answer the question, and you can stop there and not go any further. So I think it's at least worth undertaking the first phase of the assessment. The purpose of this report was, you know, going into a site, what can we do to minimize damage to ecosystem services? There's also a movement for revitalization of sites. So I think urban areas will also really be applicable on the going out of the site, what can we do to increase the provision of ecosystem services. So, you know, going in, there might not be too much you can do, but I definitely think there's a lot of opportunities there that after the site is remediated for revitalization.
Sarah, we have a related question here also from Sheila in Ohio, EPA. I'll read the question. One comment on slide 17, sometimes there can be an inherent conflict between minimizing ecological damage and the practical realities of remediation and funding. Often field work has to take place in spring and summer during, for example, breeding and nesting time. The NCP criteria, short-term versus long-term benefits, are often useful in working through such situations. Any thoughts on that?
I'll have to check out those criteria more in depth, but I definitely agree that there's probably going to be a lot of conflicts going on when undertaking this type of assessment. You know, it's going to be very site specific. You know, what's our time frame, available funding, available expertise. So there'll definitely be conflict, but hopefully project managers can do as much as they can to minimize damage.
This is Sheila. One thing working at the state level is we have mitigation requirements under our surface water program, for example. So we've been able to use that to sort of make people step back and take a look at what they need to do to minimize ecosystem damage when they're, for example, removing sediment from a river or a stream. So there are tools in our toolbox that we can also use, that we have been using.
Okay, great. I would love to follow up with you on that if you don't mind.
Sure. I mean, there's my email address on any of the comments. Feel free to, you know, email me or give me a call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
For my instance, I work on both ecological and air risk assessments and natural resource damage assessments and human health. So it's sort of like everything together, brownfield cleanup and Superfund, the smorgasbord.
Okay, great.
Related question, Sarah, how similar is this process to, you know, performing an EPA EIA? Or maybe it's a question we can put out there.
Yeah, I personally don't know the answer to that, but that is a great question to ask, and maybe that's the next step to look into.
And on the short-term effectiveness, Sheila, EPA is working, the policy office here in Superfund, is working on releasing some guidance. It's more specific to remedy selection, but it also goes into remedy implementation insofar as what are authorities and requirements under CERCLA and the NCP to consider green remediation aspects in remedy selection and implementation. So we continue to work through getting that out. We hope it'd be out a little bit earlier this year, but it's not quite finished yet. So we do expect to see that in the not-too-distant future.
That would be nice because we often run up against the federal deadline of September 30th for many things.
Okay. I'll take another question from the Internet. This is from Greg Braden, Kennedy Jenks Consultants in Portland, Oregon. The question is, given the fact that many cleanup sites are located in urban areas, how can we assure the successful connectivity of ecosystem service enhancements, for example, creation of habitat or wetlands to natural ecosystems, to natural ecological systems?
I think that's a great question. If a project manager is starting from scratch like that, I think they'll definitely have to bring in outside resources to do the job and correctly look like a natural ecosystem.
Okay. Okay. Questions from the phones?
Do you have a date that you would like comments on to receive comments for the draft paper?
I don't have a specific date, but probably within the next couple of weeks would be best. I'm hoping to completely finishing editing and get it submitted for final review within the next month. So the next couple of weeks would be great.
And does it, this is Lisa Rossman from NOAA. And it kind of follows up on some of the other questions that people ask. Does the report specifically talk about balancing ecosystem services with addressing risks at the site? Because, you know, trying to avoid ecosystem damages can be used by the RPs to not do remediation.
Exactly, and that's one thing we really want to avoid. There is a brief paragraph in the report about that this is not a way to reduce the level of necessary cleanup. And that's a big thing with green remediation in general. It's not an excuse to do nothing and just put up a fence around the site. So it is mentioned in the report, but I would appreciate, I mean, if you read it, let me know if you think it's strong enough or not, or if that point needs to be more strongly presented.
Okay, yeah, and I also was interested in what language you used about NRDA, because there are some ways that information could be shared, but if it's like litigation cases, you know, that information may not be available to EPA.
Yeah, and
so
that's why through my research, stuff with ERAs and NRDAs, I got a lot of conflicting opinions from different people. So that isn't a big section in the report. It's a brief text box about it, just saying that there is potential here. It doesn't say, this is definitely a source or whatnot. So I just think there's potential there.
The NRDC also two trustees. There's a federal trustee, but there's also the state trustee. And normally states have sunshine laws, so it's harder to get information. It's harder to keep information out of the public domain. So that's something to consider. We normally start talking about NRD data only after we have a memorandum of agreement signed with the federal trustees.
Right, and there's also tribal trustees.
Right, and I haven't had to deal with those, so I'm sure that's another whole whatever.
Right, but we do usually have a memorandum of agreement or understanding which spell out what we can and can't do.
And that those are great.
Okay, we have another question here on the internet. Would EPA be thinking of assigning a value to these services and possibly a system of credit similar to that used in the energy sector for greenhouse gas emissions?
As far as I know, the EPA hasn't done any work on that. The USDA has recently created a department, I believe it's Environmental Markets or something like that, that is looking at putting values on these services.
This is Michelle Mahoney here at EPA Superfund. I work with Carlos and Sarah in the same division. And what we're interested in is more developing the methodology for measuring the value of ecosystem services. And one in particular we've been looking at is carbon sequestration, particularly because there are, you know, there is the potential for a carbon market. So we're more interested in developing the methodology for determining the value of these services more than actually creating the market.
Okay, we have a logistics question here from Danielle from Parks Canada in Revelstoke, beautiful place. Where can we access your paper and other resource materials related to this presentation? Now, we touched on it, but it's not necessarily that obvious. I guess the first page where you logged in of the seminar has it, as well as the last slide, the next slide on your, if you click to slide, I guess it would be 26, you have access to additional resources. Let's see, that would be slide 26. Yes. And then we will also be posting this seminar once we pull the audio together on the clune.org/greenremediation section, so you have a quick link to it in case you don't remember where the login page is, which can be hard to find.
So, but how you got to this seminar, at the bottom of that page online, there's a link to additional resources. You can follow it there as well as at the end of the slides here.
Okay, phone line questions, please. Okay, give you a couple of minutes in case somebody wants to formulate the last question. But in the meantime, as we said on slide 26, you have a link to additional resources that includes all the references that Sarah pulled together for her paper as well as the paper itself. And then more importantly or equally importantly is the feedback form. We value your feedback. We've been doing these internet seminars for about 10 years, but we always find and hear of new ideas of how to improve them, both specific to this seminar as well as to the basic internet seminar platform itself. So, again, let me ask if there are any more questions on the phone lines. No, I'll take one last question from the internet. Corey Clark from Argonne National Lab here in D.C. The question is, what do you see as the next step in addressing some of the outstanding issues mentioned in your presentation?
I think there definitely needs to be further research on the connections between ecosystem services themselves, and how impacts will affect the provision of services. So that is obviously a big thing. That's not a simple thing to address, but I definitely think that will reduce the uncertainty of this type of assessment. And I also think that getting this type of assessment out there, you know, obviously standardizing it and getting it out there at RPMs to say this is what you could do, you know, for the ecosystem. So I definitely think more research is needed as well as a standardized process, because mine is just outlining what could be done.
Okay, I just got a note that the link is not working on page slide 26. Please keep that slide up there. We'll be working on it real time. So hopefully in the next 10 minutes it will be up. Otherwise, we may have to send you an email with that link once it's operated. But please hang on for 10 minutes or so, and hopefully it will be live. Anything else? Oh, on that last question, this fall, I expect we will be having a broader Internet seminar on a methodology for quantifying environmental footprints at site cleanups, and any further work that takes place specific to ecosystem services will be rolled up to that Internet seminar. So be on the lookout through TechDirect on CLUIN, or more specifically on the Green Mediation section of CLUIN, for announcements on the on that environmental footprint methodology Internet seminar. Okay, so again, sorry about that issue with slide, the link on slide 26. We'll be working it real time, so if you can, keep that slide up and check back in about 10 minutes. We'll see if we made it live. Thank you very much to everybody for participating. Looks like we had a great turnout, and appreciate your participation with the questions throughout the call. And Sarah, thank you very much, and good luck with your work going forward.